Chapter 13. Olympia Invested. 000.M31 Olympia. The 125th Expeditionary Fleet came screaming out of the warp, well within the system bounds of Olympia. Away from the safety of the Mandeville Point, their arrival tore a hole in the fabric of space that would never properly heal. Tortured by the sudden imposition of the system's gravity fields, the heavy cruiser Agamemnon succumbed to the damage that had been inflicted by the Harud and detonated upon arrival, a brief supernova that signalled to the Olympians that the Lord of Iron had returned home. 1,000 legionaries were on board, yet Perturabo spared no glance for the bright flare of their death, ordering his fleet to make directly for Olympia without delay. His ships arrayed into a planetfall spearhead, the Primarch returned home at full speed. Foryx arrived upon the command deck to find his fellow Triarchs already there. A host of warsmiths and captains had assembled around the pit of the Hololith. A soft light of Urzat's planet shine bathed their faces. Darkness cloaked their backs thickly, and shadows they would never shake were at their heels. Perturabo stood head and shoulders over the mightiest of his sons. Surrounded by the dull steel of his legion's warplate, he was a lone mountain, towering from a plain of iron skulls. The command deck of a space marine warship was a noisy place. Officers, human and transhuman, gave orders. Vox reports came in from all over the vessel and from the fleet. Muttered data streams issued from the biomechanical mouths of servitors. Machinery of every kind compressed the air with their quiet work songs. The whisper of coolant systems, the progressive chiming of system notifications, the whir of cogs and data spools, the huffing of life support, the click of banks of indication lights. And presiding over it all, the key theme in the great melody of a starship symphony, the distant throbbing of the engines that penetrated every atom of a man until the vibration became a part of his bones. Over that was the sharper, more urgent humming of 100 battleplate reactors crammed together. Virtually silent alone, their combined voices made a buzzsaw whine that settled uncomfortably around the teeth. Foryx moved quietly to the front of the crowd. His brothers stepped grudgingly aside as they saw who tapped at their shoulders. Despite the noise and the look of intense, almost insane concentration on Perturabo's face, the Primarch sensed his approach and turned to look directly at him.
"You arrive, Foryx," he said. "How went the inspection?"
The Grand Hololith was dominated by a true picked representation of Olympia and her attendant satellites. The remainder of the resupply fleet were in high anchor, broadsides turned planetwards. Despite the threat in its sky, the world turned lazily. Stepped ranks of mountain ranges dominated the surface, twisted by tectonic activity into fractured lines, like formations of soldiers taking part in a complicated display drill. Basins cupped small green-blue seas. Thousands of lakes were trapped in the arrowheads of high valleys. Olympia was a naked world, its rocky skin showing sandy grey and brown, but it wore enough green to cover its modesty. Sparse forests shrouded mountain flanks. Emerald slashes were long valleys of fertile land. White was the final predominant colour, evident in wisps of cloud curling around mountain ranges and spun into small storms by the thrusting landscape, and in the ice capping the highest peaks and the poles. Here and there were brownish stains in the sky over concentrations of industry, but it was not a ruined world. Not yet. Foryx looked upon it and felt profoundly sad, for what he had once been, for what he had become, and for what his lord would ask him to do. Violence was the only possible outcome here. Harkor and Golg stood either side of the Primarch. There was a space around them, as if they were surrounded by an invisible shield that kept the others back. Foryx stepped within this orbit, and he felt the tension emanating from his master.
7 grand battalions are prepared, as you requested, my lord, said Foryx. They stand ready for deployment. All craft are assembled aboard the embarkation decks of the Iron Blood, Grand Megara, Vengeance of Tolos, and the Ferric Tyrant.
Good, said Perturabo.
In the blue-green light of the simulated Olympia, the hollows of his face were shadowed black, making him appear cadaverous. A furious light burned in his blue eyes, Their coldness had become so intense it burned.
What is the plan?
Asked Forex with great foreboding.
You know what I'm going to do, Forex. I'm going to teach them that no one defies Perturabo.
That you ask suggests you disagree with our lord's ruling, Forex, said Harcourt snidely.
I prefer not to make assumptions, said Forex,
tired of his constant sniping. Harcourt wore his helmet, but Golg was bareheaded, and the greedy sneer on his face disturbed Forex. Golg was of lower birth than Harcourt or himself, and behaved so. What remembered slights did he hope to avenge? Forex checked himself before he looked back at the other officers to judge their mood. Any show of dissent would be punished brutally. Forex had long been Perturabo's favourite. He had kept the position by knowing that he was not immune to his lord's temper. For the first time in an age, Forex was unsure. He put the metal to the stone where his lord commanded, no matter when or where. But the stone here was that of his home. The metal would sunder the flesh of his kin before it bit into its target. Perturabo was in a murderous rage. Forex had no hope that the Primarch would see sense and the bloodshed might be slight. He could try to reason with his lord, but that might well end with his own death. Forex had no desire to die, though the thought did not unduly trouble him. He had been made a living weapon, and the Emperor used his tools hard. Forex had resigned himself to dying a long time ago. He did, however, have a choice in how he would end. Further complicating his feelings was the fact that, although the thought of attacking their home world sickened him, he could not, no matter how hard he tried, convince himself that the Primarch was wrong. Data tags appended to the world and its orbitals swam around the display. Pre-action markers. There had never been any doubt that it would come to war. The sea of red data screed, scrolling, blinking, or frozen according to Perturabo's whim, settled it.
"Summon the Master of the High Watch,"
ordered Perturabo. A muted confirmation came from the communications array banking up the rear wall of the command deck. Olympia disappeared. An unhelmeted warrior appeared in its place. He would have been waiting for the summons, probably ever since the fleet breached real space. His expression was studiously blank. In the striped light of hololith projection ribbons, he looked like a corpse.
Captain Atrax, said Perturabo stonily. Report.
My lord, said Atrax, I see Captain Thesuga succeeded in his mission and has brought you home. It is with great joy that I see you arrive here. The situation upon the planet's surface is unfortunate, but now you have returned, I believe it can be resolved swiftly.
What happened? Interrupted Perturabo. Tell me in as few words as you can manage, Captain.
The captain blinked.
Governor Demikos died 3 months ago, my lord. Within weeks, the succession was disputed. Small-scale fighting broke out between some of the cities. When Captain Thesuga's fleet arrived to collect the recruits, there was no central authority to communicate with, and our demands for supplies were denied. I set the resupply fleet here to guard the system and sent Thesuga to fetch you. In the interim, I have received delegations from many of the factions. They are coalescing into a number of power blocks that...
And you did nothing?
Again Perturabo interrupted.
There are 500 Iron Warriors aboard the orbitals, the ships, and upon the planet. You stood idle while all this went on?
The Primarch sounded reasonable. Everyone that heard his voice knew the tone for a lie. The captain's hesitation was minute but telling. He stood straighter.
We threatened action, my lord, but we did not wish to act hastily. There is a large secessionist element on the planet, but their opposition is by no means unified. Only some wish to secede, but all of them demand change. If we had appeared to side with one faction over another, I calculated that the planet would slide rapidly into full-blown civil war. We have blockaded Olympia, and the orbitals remain in our hands.
You judge this sufficient discharge of your duties?
Yes, my lord, I do. This is not some minor acquisition, but our homeworld. I judged it best to proceed with caution.
Caution? Said Perturabo.
The Imperium was not won by caution, Captain Atrax. You have performed poorly. You are to relinquish command immediately to your lieutenants and report to me aboard the Iron Blood.
Atrax's face remained blank.
As you command, my lord.
Forex doubted very much that Atrax would survive the encounter.
Show me Olympia again,
commanded Perturabo. Atrax disappeared. Frequency tether bulbs pulsed off. The projection ribbons whooped, and Olympia again hung serenely in the false void conjured by the hololith. For long moments, Perturabo stared at his adopted world. When he turned to look at Forex, the Primarch's decision was written across his face.
Triarch Forex, send word to the cities of our homeworld. We will meet them in Pali, under the flag of Irene.
Perturabo passed a scroll to Forex before returning his gaze to the hololithic representation of Olympia.
These are my instructions. See that they are carried out to the letter. As you command, my lord,
said Forex. His heart was sick with misgiving, but he was wise enough to keep that to himself. Within sight of Cardis stood the great peak of the Adarene. Other mountains exceeded it in height, but few did in beauty. The Adarene's head was close to a perfect pyramid, three sheer sides of grey rock lined with delicate strata picked out in ice and snow were set above broad shoulders covered in dense fragrant pine forest. They called the peak the Old Man, for it looked like an elder swathed in a heavy cloak of green. Upon the Adarene shoulders, Perturabo set his camp. His engineers felled a patch of forest, removing the thin soil and levelling a 200-metre circle of the ground to within a millimetre of perfect flatness. Curious mountain dwellers, the herders and hunters of the forest, were drawn by the towers of smoke roaring upwards from the Iron Warrior's fusion cutters and rock saws. The Legion ignored them. Perturabo ordered steps cut into the mountainside, leading down to the highway over 2,000 metres below. This was the great road of Pelacontia, the same road he had taken to Cardis many years ago when he had set out on his quest to unite the world. His crusade had been idealistic, foolish, a waste of time. These were the thoughts of the Primarch as he watched his siege masters at work and remembered those days, for a great and potent rancor had flooded his being. Perturabo had a large pavilion of iron-grey silk erected by his men, its central adamantine pole as tall as a mast and mighty enough to resist the winds that coursed periodically from the mountain's peak. The floor was polished to an ice-slick finish and covered in washed white sand, and the pavilion had been furnished as the lords of Olympia would expect, though the Primarch made it clear there were to be no chairs within. The work was simple graft for the Iron Warriors, and took less than a day. Before the sun began to sink, heralds from the nearest cities had already arrived to speak with the Primarch. He stood in full view so that they might see him, but all were turned away from the top of the steps leading to the camp. Perturabo set no walls about the site, or defences of any kind. This alone was enough to warn the wise of what was to come. A few of the emissaries returned home swiftly. That night, the camp was sombre. Few lights burned. No speech or song was heard by the onlookers peering at it from the woods or encamped impatiently at the head of the stairs. Halfway to the highway, a second camp was set, where the warriors and attendants of the emissaries were told to wait. The ambassadors themselves remained at the top, lest Perturabo admit the delegation suddenly. At dawn, First Captain Forex came out to the representatives. Others had joined the group in the course of the night, wearing their badges and city colours proudly. None of those things had meant more than civic pride when Forex had first left his home world. Now they were the markers of belligerence. How quickly things had changed. Stiff-limbed, the emissaries got to their feet as the steel-clad giant approached them. The pair of sentries, motionless as statues through the night, turned about and stamped their feet, marching away in lockstep. Forex waited at the stairhead, the rising sun turning his plain armour the colour of molten bronze. He surveyed the gathered mortals and their varied expressions of fear, awe, and ill-temper. Perturabo could have voxed the message he was about to deliver planet-wide, but Forex's master understood the value of theatre.
I am Warsmith Forex, first captain and triarch. I bring you words from my Primarch, the Lord of Iron.
He swept his gaze over them all, a threat that they listen properly.
The Primarch will speak with your masters. Go to them. Inform them that he summons them all under the strict peace of Irene that governs the lords of every city on Olympia. If your masters are like the tyrants of old, they will be craven creatures, preferring to use others to safeguard themselves. Know this. If they do not come personally, the Primarch will be displeased. So I advise you to choose your speakers wisely. You have half a day to bring them here.
The emissaries waited. None wished to be the first to leave. An unctuous little man with the forked beard of a Vedric came forwards. He had little muscle, a contemptible specimen, brought up in a world of plenty. Truly, these people did not understand what they had unleashed.
Most of us here are designated speakers with full power to negotiate on our city's behalf. All those he needs to speak with are already present. Why the delay?
Asked the man with the polished, equable tones of a professional diplomat. Forex hated the man at first sight. He found it shameful that they shared a common origin. This man had no honour, no warrior spirit. He was a viper. Men like him had knowingly led Olympia away from the truth and back to petty wars. His ilk thrived on intrigue, while warriors bled at their behest.
"Because you are not good enough," said Forex.
"If we might speak with the Primarch now, it would save much effort later," insisted the man.
"You cannot see him,"
said Forex simply, and turned his back on them. His leaving unstoppered the mouths of the rest, and they erupted with questions as he strode back towards the pavilion. The voices of the emissaries became more strident as he moved further from them, but not one of them dared leave the safety of the steps and tread upon the platform, even though there were no sentries in sight to stop them. More evidence of their cowardice.
"How low the mighty of Olympia have sunk," Forex thought, "to abandon not only wisdom, but courage alongside it."
All the worst things had returned. None of the good. They deserved to die. The half-day passed. The cities complied, sending their nobles to the parley. After they had arrived, Perturabo made the high men and women wait outside his pavilion for most of the day, before he told his Tyranthikos veterans to allow them in. The heights of the Adarene were cold, even in summer, but the air was thin and the sun strong. Despite the chill of the mountain, skin burned easily under its rays. The nobles filed in, haughty in their bearing, as if they could not see that they stared death in the face. Of course, none of the tyrants or minor city princelings had come themselves.
"How dare their messengers be so calm, so assured," thought Perturabo. "They should be crawling on their bellies and begging for mercy."
They had with them heralds who announced them in ringing voices. Ptolemaides, Damek, Crastonfor, Falk, Erastane, and a score of other noble names. At the front came the representatives of the bloodlines, from whose ranks the tyrants had historically been drawn. Perturabo could see the family resemblance in these minor sons and daughters, the sneering superiority that they could not hide, nor would ever have thought to. He had bested the armies of their ancestors. He had trailed footprints in their blood through the high palaces of their cities, but still they were too proud to be afraid. They looked around the sandy floor of the pavilion for seats. Finding none, their arrogance was seasoned with outrage, leaving the Primarch struggling between laughter and violence. He calmed himself. Now was not the time. Perturabo alone had a place to sit, upon his great throne brought down from the Iron Blood. He would replace it, he decided. The style was Olympian, and he had little love for such artifacts now. The emissaries arrayed themselves in front of the Lord of Iron. A few exchanged sharp words over their relative positioning. Around half of them wore red bands around their right arms, a smaller number blue. A handful wore no ribbon. Factions, then. Perturabo matched the names and faces with the cities. It appeared the planet had split along the lines of the old Achaean Hexopolis and the Pentuic League, the two groupings that had opposed his unification of Olympia a century and a half ago. Predictable, and a harbinger of further fragmentation. Before long, it would be city-state against city-state again. Perturabo was leadenly tired of it all.
"You have chosen one to speak for all," said Perturabo.
He was hidden in the gloom at the back of the tent. The hole around the anchoring ring of the pavilion let in a band of sunlight divided by the shadows of ropes. This solitary light was so bright that the rest of the space was cast into near darkness. A woman stepped forwards.
"Demeter of Echos,"
her herald announced. Perturabo did not recognize her. She had not been born the last time Perturabo had been upon Olympia.
"Primarch Perturabo," she declaimed, "we of the Achaean Hexopolis petition you to join with us and put down these Pentuic dogs, that we might have peace again."
"You look like your great, great, great grandmother," said Perturabo quietly.
The statement wrong-footed the woman. Her bearing was proud, but not proud enough to hide fear, and nor could it conceal her confusion.
"She was a clever woman," continued Perturabo. "When I approached the gates of Akos with the men of Lokos and the Iron Band, she threw open her gates and welcomed me. Your city stands today thanks to her wisdom. I do not detect the same thoughtfulness in you."
He looked over the others.
"And you, of the Red Ribbons, the Pentuic League," he snorted. "You resurrect that pathetic group. Why do you come to me? Doubtless you also will ask for my support in seceding from the Imperium of Man."
Didymus Diagoras, the spokesman of the Pentuic Party, seized his chance.
"And we ask no such thing. We ask only to be left alone. The Imperium bleeds us dry." "Traitors," said Demeter. "Perhaps were it not for the machinations of the Achaeans, we would not be in this woeful situation," retorted Didymus. "We are loyal," said Demeter. "Our grievances are the same," said Didymus. "Our aims are not."
"And you have no ribbons?" said Perturabo.
He spoke mildly. The emissaries would see no danger in his mood, but his sons did.
"We are proud to stand alone," said one of them,
misinterpreting Perturabo's equanimity as genuine.
"My lord, if we may begin our negotiations, there are several grievances we would put to you,"
said Demeter.
"Once those are resolved, we of the Blue Ribbons will return home."
"The grievances we can agree on," said Didymus. "The resumption of imperial rule we cannot. We of the Pentuic League demand our planet back."
"Do not listen to him, my lord. The Achaean Hexopolis wish for speedy re-establishment of proper authority, if only we can discuss the heavy burdens of recruitment upon our people," said Demeter.
It was plain enough that she despised Didymus and wished to hurry through the talks to be away from him.
"And what about your demands we cede the Ischian Peninsula to your puppets in Doros? You protest loyalty while using it as a cloak to seize our rightful lands," said Didymus.
"Lies,"
said Demeter. They began to argue, shouting at one another, forgetting that they were in the presence of a demigod. Perturabo's irritation swelled.
"This is not a negotiation," he said quietly.
The argument continued, drawing in more of the delegation. His temper broke, cresting suddenly as a wave. He slammed his hand into the arm of his chair. The clash of metal did not halt their bickering either.
"This is not a negotiation," he shouted.
They fell silent.
"This is not your chance to petition me or instruct me in your meaningless squabbles."
He sat forwards in his throne, bringing his face into the brightness of the sun. The shadows cast on its features made it a crag as hard as any mountains. His voice was slow and forceful, building to a shout again.
All my life, your people used me. Told me what to do until my true father came. You forget the new order. The tyrant of Lukos was made planetary governor. You should have honored the succession when Demacos died.
We are not opposed to the Imperium,
said Demetea.
We are loyal to the ideal, just not the execution.
The new order? Submit ourselves to hereditary tyranny of the entire planet to make your task in subjugating our spirit easier,
said Didymus incredulously.
No more! We remove ourselves from your Imperium. Your new order has done no good to Olympia.
No good, you say?
Said Perturabo. He lifted up his hand in a gesture of reasonableness.
Unity, peace, new technologies, a life of ease free from war and outside threat. Without me, every mother on this planet would still be praying that the black judges choose not to visit during her children's lifetimes. What have you lost? Your ability to make war on each other? The chance for one family in each city to set themselves over every other citizen? Your accounting of the truth is poor.
My lord, you relieved us of one terror only to replace it with one greater,
protested Didymus.
Where once dozens were taken every century, now thousands are recruited every year.
Perturabo's eyes narrowed. His metal throne creaked under the strength of his grip.
We lose our children to you, said Demetea. You have taken them, changed them, and led them to their deaths on foreign spheres. To those who oppose you, you and your emperor seem no better than the black judges, and the numbers you take exceed those the ancient lords of the Meritara cluster stole by far.
Lies!
Snapped Perturabo.
Your sons are heroes, not feedstock.
Then show us that is so, said Demetea. Give us the word of your emperor that he values their sacrifice.
A hot shiver of anger passed over the Primarch's skin.
Do not use his name against me,
said Perturabo with quiet menace.
What of our grievances? Said Didymus. The political situation needs to be addressed. If we are to reconsider remaining as part of this polity, then our situation must change.
Perturabo turned to him with a rictus smile.
What of your grievances? Do you believe them to be relevant? Truly?
He affected the sarcastic amity of a victorious despot. It was a role he had played before, and one that these men before him understood. He pretended it was necessary, and that he did not perform the role simply for the joy of it.
You will consider our requests, then?
Perturabo's false smile froze and fell away.
Do you not see? Did you think Olympia is special somehow because I was found here? This world is like any other that has refused the light of the Emperor's protection. It is non-compliant, and shall suffer the wrath of our Legion as a non-compliant world.
He stood over the men and women.
You have not been on the front of the Great Crusade. You have not witnessed the worlds I have burned, the cultures I have extirpated, the Xenos breeds I have consigned to extinction. If you had seen but one of the horrors waiting out there in the void, you would offer up your children without complaint. All that blood was spilt with one purpose, to safeguard mankind. Every human world, some of surpassing beauty and with cultures better than Olympia's, that said no to the Emperor's offer, was destroyed. Why? To protect the greater bulk of mankind. You are rich with folly to think this slight could go unanswered. This is rebellion, no less, and will be answered as such.
It is a negotiation, spluttered Didymus. An arbitration called under the ancient tenets of Irene, and you threaten us with violence.
You speak of peace,
said Perturabo furiously.
You had peace, and you have turned your back on it. I judged you the moment I heard of your treachery, and I found you guilty.
He took a step forwards, frightening the emissaries back.
There can be no negotiation with traitors.
He laughed, A nervous note made it warble madly. The reasonable nature that had once ruled his heart watched in alarm as this pantomime unfolded, but it was powerless to stop the event's progression. Perturabo doubted he would have stopped it, even if he could. For days he had debated what he should do, sliding inexorably toward the path of blood. Now his feet were set upon it, it was almost a relief to follow it to its natural conclusion.
See?
Perturabo nodded at his dominators. With inactive power fists, they pulled heavy golden cords. Knots all along the wall tops untied, and the skirts of the pavilion tent dropped to the floor, leaving the bell standing. Cold wind blew in, making the sand of the floor skitter away. Perturabo pointed eastwards towards Cardis. Its black fortifications dominated the horizon. The deep cleft of the Cardicron Pass faced them, showing its ranks of walls as a reptile splays its ruffs in threat.
Before my conquest of Cardis, its walls were deemed unbreakable. Not one enemy had succeeded in overthrowing them in over 1,000 years. Not until I brought them down. I rebuilt them to a better plan. Against any ground force, they would be unbreakable, save by me. I will not conquer this city as I once did. I will not break its walls or kill its people with my warriors.
There were looks of relief on the faces of some. Others were more cautious.
What will you do?
Asked Eugon Ptolemaides, whose city Cardis was.
I will destroy it. Utterly. I will annihilate Cardis. It was the site of my first victory in the unification of Olympia. It shall be the beginning of its punishment.
He settled back into his throne.
Let fire herald the return of the Lord of Iron. No, please, my lord, I beg you, said Ptolemaides.
You cannot,
began Demetea. Perturabo closed his fist. Blazing spears of light stabbed down from the ships in orbit. Lance strikes ionized the atmosphere and sent thunderclaps of heat-shocked air across the mountains. They slammed into the near-invisible void bubble covering Cardis. Unearthly growling echoed from the faces of Olympia's stern mountains as it collapsed. The shrieking whine of incoming heavy ordnance made conversation impossible. Giant shells fell from the sky, burning white with the heat of re-entry. They left smoking contrails that crossed one another in gentle curves, and then, in a fury of fire and roaring destruction, they levelled Cardis. The sky blazed. The emissaries threw up their hands against the light and cried out. An atomic bloom billowed from the city. Wind howled outwards, blowing the tent away and battering the emissaries down to their knees. Fire blasted out in every direction, setting the forests of the mountains alight and turning farmland in the valleys to poison ash.
I fought long and hard to find enough fissile elements to make the weapons that originally brought this world to its senses,
shouted Perturabo over the moaning, hot death wind blowing from Cardis.
Thanks to the Emperor and the priests of Mars, I have better weapons now. Engines of destruction that you cannot imagine.
The cap of the atomic cloud spread outwards, the pillar of steam and dust it rested on so thick it appeared solid.
You will not be given the chance to learn.
The wind dropped, its force decreasing with unnatural smoothness to a warm breeze. Where Cardis had once stood, there now blazed a firestorm, hemorrhaging black smoke under a dispersing nuclear cloud.
The fate of Olympia will be decimation, as I enacted upon my legion when I found it wanting. So shall it be here.
He closed his eyes. He did not care to hide his pain.
You will kill one in every 10 of us,
said Demetea.
You will do it yourselves, replied Perturabo.
You will never succeed in convincing our people to turn on each other, she said.
I do not expect to, said Perturabo.
His neck was stiff. He rolled his head, and the input cables burrowed into his scalp rattled.
Those that comply will be spared. Those that do not will be exterminated or enslaved. If you will not serve this legion and the Emperor as freemen, then you shall serve me in chains. As many worlds have learnt, such is the cost of non-compliance.
Iron warriors trooped around the group, encircling them in gleaming ceramite. Ash clouds spreading from the ruins of Cardis had turned the day dark and cold.
Irene! We came here under the flag of Irene!
Shouted Didymus.
Your customs mean nothing to me. They never have. Here begins the lesson that Olympia must learn. Loyalty is the only virtue I value. If you have no loyalty, you are worthless.
He raised his hand.
We are loyal, said Demeter in a rising panic. We do not wish to leave the Imperium. You misunderstand.
I understand perfectly. You wish to change your relationship to it. It is not amenable to alteration unless heated and beaten upon. Your limp requests have no appeal. You are all traitors. The question is of absolutes, not degree. Your men will die. You shall die. Your cities shall die. Cardis is but the first, and before I am done, all Olympia will throw itself to its knees and beg for forgiveness.
He turned from his captives to his warriors.
Kill them all, he ordered. Leave none alive, but do not spoil the heads. Send those back to their cities. These creatures have one last message to deliver.
The emissaries tried to run. Perturabo watched as they were shot down, and their blood soaked into the sand, blowing away from the mountain. Perturabo had the Carvia Ferrum installed beneath the smoking ruins of Cardis, his labyrinthine lair of iron halls and subtle energy fields that could misdirect any intruder. From there, he directed the devastation of his adopted home. No quarter was given. After Cardis, none was expected. The depleted armies of Olympia tried everything against their estranged sons, from outright assault to full surrender. None of them were successful. They were cut down where they stood. Brutalized by decades of inglorious war, feeling abandoned and undervalued, the treachery of their own people was one burden too much for the Iron Warriors to bear. Without mercy or conscience, the Legion slaughtered its way across the planet. There were exceptions. Individual legionaries, or small formations who refused to enact the Primarch's will, they were treated as harshly as the civilian populace. Phoros, Ischia, Vren, and Akos fell in quick succession on the first 2 days. Each city was cast down. At first, Perturabo took them slowly, letting the fear of his vengeance build across the planet. As his campaign progressed, the pace of conquest accelerated. Several cities fell every day as Perturabo split his legion, sending individual grand companies to every quarter of the world. Contests were made of the speed and ingenuity with which each city could be overthrown. It became a grim celebration of the martial arts among the Lord of Iron's sons. First, a city's walls were shattered by massive bombardment, then the breaches stormed by Iron Warriors, and so it was repeated again and again. Perturabo had fashioned the defences of the principal cities. These proved the greatest challenges, and individual warsmiths fought over the honour of their reduction. The rest, ringed with antiquated stone walls dating from the days of the tyrants, were taken in a matter of hours. As he promised, Perturabo gave the option to cities to execute a tenth of their populations. Few acquiesced to begin with. Not until they heard the Iron Warriors were exterminating more than half of the people and enslaving any who survived. Hesitantly, parts of Olympia responded, sacrificing one-tenth of its people to the Lord of Iron. Funeral pyres hundreds of meters high were erected outside each ruined city. The mounded bodies set afire with plasma bombs. They burned for days. Wailing chains of slaves were herded into mass transit lifters and hauled into orbit. There were holdouts. The eyes of those Olympians who did not surrender turned skywards nervously to the fleet. But the iron stars Perturabo had set over their world kept their silence. Perturabo had determined to reduce each city in the time-honored way, by blood, metal, and stone. He saved Locos for last.